Every day I wake up with a single dream running through my head. To throw a little stone into a mighty stream and watch the ripples as they spread. If you want to make a ripple, if you want to make a wave, playing safe and thinking small doesn't move the ball at all. There's humanity to save. An excerpt from the song Ripple from the movie Spirited. Hi, I'm Ansi and welcome to my podcast For the Love of Group Fitness. I've been a multidisciplined group fitness instructor for over 30 years. I'm a trainer, and as well as having a yoga studio and a network marketing business, I help fit pros kickstart and build successful businesses. This podcast is about the crazy yet wonderfully addictive world of group fitness and what we as instructors do and don't do for the love of it. Hi, this is Ansi and welcome to this week's episode. It's my absolute pleasure to introduce you to Debbie Bellinger. Now, Debbie came into my world sometime, I think last year, and we've had quite a few conversations over that time, and she just so inspires me, absolutely inspires me. So who's Debbie? Debbie's a prominent figure in the health and wellness industry, and she serves as the CEO and founder of Body by Definition, which is a distinguished advisory and education services company. She's widely recognized as a thought leader in her field, and Debbie has dedicated her career to advancing the field of wellness programming with a particular focus on community wellness, corporate wellness, and medical wellness. She's an esteemed speaker and she's presented regularly at numerous prestigious fitness conventions, including Cannes Fit Pro in Canada, MFA, Club Industry, and SCW. So in addition to her speaking engagements, Debbie also offers valuable consulting services to fitness clubs seeking to embrace the wellness model. Okay, she helps them transition and elevate their offerings. What she's also doing now, which I think is fantastic and so needed here in the UK, is doing the same, but for fitness instructors, group fitness instructors, personal trainers who want to bridge that gap from fitness into wellness. So do check her out. Her expertise, passion, and dedication makes her an invaluable asset to the industry, inspiring individuals and organizations alike to prioritize holistic well-being and adopt a proactive approach to personal and community health. Enjoy. All right. So Debbie, welcome. Welcome to For the Love of Group Fitness podcast. It's wonderful to have you join us today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Where are you zooming in from?
Upstate South Carolina.
Oh, I think that needs to be on my list. I keep meeting a lot of people from Carolina, North and South. So
yeah, I would put it on the list. I am 10 minutes from the North Carolina border. So for me to get to Asheville, which is a wonderful place to visit in the mountains, it's kind of a kitschy town, very eclectic, a big feel for the arts, nature, good food, music, hiking, waterfalls, you know, that's about 40 minutes from here.
Nice. Really lovely. Sounds lovely. So we met recently, fairly recently. Through Bob.
Was it Bob? I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Got to blame him for something. So for our listeners, and well, actually for our listeners that are listening in, I was fascinated when we, you know, managed to catch a Zoom together just to find out a little bit more about each other. And how, you know, you're doing huge amounts of work in the wellness space. And I think that is so, so needed, you know, today, I would say even yesterday, as well as moving forwards. So do tell our listeners, you know, your background, like, was this what you wanted to be when you were a child? How did you start off?
Yeah, so the answer is yes. I grew up in a very active family in Canada, and I always wanted to be a teacher. But as I went through teenage years deciding which university, it was particularly physical education. So teaching movement, right? That concept. And I've been very blessed in my career and just incredibly blessed. I was able to be the fitness coordinator while doing my master's degree at the University of Western Ontario. And I knew at that point that was just so what I wanted to do. It was just a perfect blend of being in the education space around health and wellness, being the fitness coordinator for the university program, teaching Group X. I taught at the Y as well. All of that, I just knew that was where I wanted to be, exactly where my career was going to take me. Oh, I don't think I knew or had any idea how amazing it could all be, but I'm a little bit of a unicorn in the industry. I did grow up through the fitness track and being a Group X coordinator, coordinator to manager, manager to director, director to senior vice president in fitness and operations. And honestly, my career kind of took a little bit of a curve that I did not anticipate, but I'm so very grateful for being the first ever director of wellness for two hospital systems in America as a Canadian girl. So that was formative for me in my career because now I was taking all of my fitness background experience and management and operations, all those things, budget and everything. To now be a director of wellness for a hospital meant that my learning curve within what I was doing to impact lives and influence lives with fitness and exercise to better health now became a much bigger call to action. So being on a hospital payroll exposed me to not only keeping on with what I was doing in Group X and personal training, but now learning to adapt and learn how to create wellness programs for the not so healthy. So being able to receive members into my medical wellness centers from the community at large who presented with a lot of things, diabetes, hypertension, I just had a knee replacement, I just had my hip replaced, I just completed bariatric surgery. That was a much broader scope of programming than leading 120 Group X classes a week that I was overseeing, or $300,000 of personal training revenue in a center. Now I was figuring out what kind of programming will I offer for those with diabetes or hypertension or bariatric surgery, which is very complex. So that became a newfound joy for me. I really realized in that chapter, and I was 23 years as a director of wellness for healthcare systems in America, my love and my passion to serve those that had certain health conditions. And it went bigger than that for me in my soul. It was not only that, but it made me realize working with those audiences how much I really wanted to use health as hope. Truly to, you know, I could meet someone and they would share their journey and say, I know I need to exercise, Debbie, but you know, the standard, I need to lose 30 pounds before I join your center. We all know this, right?
Yeah.
My heart hurt for them because it was like, no, you don't. But our fitness community and our club environment so caters, and still to this day, to the fit, that I understood with the whole of my heart and the experience in managing multiple clubs nationwide, that if you took a step back, which I was forced to do, well, there are a lot of folks who believe that you need to be a certain shape, size, color, fit into a certain, you know, size jean, or that, and you had to wear leggings to exercise, that that was the norm of what we offer. And so we were leaving about 80% of the population outside of the gym to figure out how do we, do I need to be able to stuff myself into some leggings to go to Ann's yoga class? Do I really need to do that? And this was my learning in working with patients that came from the docs into our center. I didn't have the wellness programs to accommodate them, nor did I have personal trainers that knew how to work with a bariatric patient. So that chapter in South Carolina, the first 12 years of being on a hospital payroll was amazing, Anne, because I had to grow. I had to grow as a leader. I had to learn about bariatric patients and hypertensives and knee replacements, make sure that I understood the health of that. And we still cater to the fit and all that. You don't remove any of the things we do. We simply layer it in more than what we had for the fit that we did exceptionally well. But what about everybody else? And so I found a new love in the industry of programming and training up my Group X instructors. We were running 120 classes, and my personal trainers to have more advanced skills to accommodate those with different needs. And so I just found a new place to play, right? And it was like, this is so good. And I also learned in both health systems how to create employee wellness programs for our own employees. And so that's a little bit about me. I've just kind of grown up in the industry by virtue of taking roles that leaned into my skill set, but also challenged me to learn more and do more. And so at this point in my career, it really is looking at opportunities for what does the current consumer profile look like post-pandemic, and where do we need to fill gaps and do better?
Wow. I'm going to take you back. So your first wellness job, what year was that?
That was, let me think about this, 1999, first director of wellness job in South Carolina.
99.
Up to that point, it was all fitness jobs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. How would you have defined wellness back then? And would you say the definition has changed over the years?
That's a brilliant question. So good. That's a great question. So yes, it has changed phenomenally. So wellness at the time was the journey began with exercise always. Let's get you moving. And that makes sense. That makes perfect sense. And then it was, okay, now let's eat better. Let's move more. And then it was eat better. And particular to where I was in South Carolina, which is a huge segment of the tobacco farms. So a huge incidence of smokers. I think it was 17 or 18% of the population in that county that I was in South Carolina. And then on into my North Carolina role, a big number of the local population smoked. So it typically was a wellness journey was let's get you moving more. Now let's eat better. And now let's tackle the smoking. And if it wasn't the smoking, a corollary was stress was right in there as well, right? Mm-hmm. We never started with stress less. It was move more. This was just like the steps we took. I cannot explain why it is, but I do think some of the evidence-based medicine in the work that ACSM did with Medical Fitness Association was a huge predictor of us assuming that model, because we do know exercise is medicine. Very important, right? Mm-hmm. Now, wellness is very different, and we're leaning more into the terminology, most particularly, although it is expanding in corporate wellness, the term well-being. And the idea being that well-being is more, you have the tenets of wellness, but the layer of well-being is a holistic approach to finding opportunity for a person to find joy in what it is that they're doing, no matter where they begin. So you might start with nutrition. And even bigger than that is understanding your purpose and your why in your life. So well-being is largely attributed to, do you know what your purpose is? Because if you don't have that, and with you being a yoga practitioner, I'm going to say you're way more expert in this than I, but what I have learned thus far in my journey is that the root of behavioral change, no matter where you begin with changing nutrition or sleep hygiene or stressing less or assuming movement, why are you here and what are you doing and why do you need to be well? What is your purpose? And I think a lot of individuals don't necessarily get out of the gate because the psyche of that, we don't have clarity why we're getting up every day. And that makes for a different existence. So well-being is a term that we're using more in different places and spaces.
Yeah, I find that interesting because I think perhaps more with the general public, those two words, wellness and well-being, are probably used interchangeably.
I agree with you. I think they are. And that's okay. Mm. That's okay. I think the fact, honestly, and that's really an interesting point. I think that's okay. I think the fact that wellness is that term is being used more in more environments, groups, disciplines, sprinkled in all over versus fitness as a standalone is showing that we're evolving in our industries, right? And that's a really good thing. I think there's huge value to that and moving along the paradigm of continual growth in our industry to well-being being more commonplace over time. Because it is more comprehensive. It is more inclusive. It speaks more to the mind, body, and spirit. We're not just a moving machine. The brain element, we're speaking more to that with mental health being such a crisis in the world. So I think this is a very rich time for us as practitioners to lean into our strengths and to grow as a discipline. We simply have to grow and be more expansive and inclusive. And if wellness is a better catch-all term, that it's more relatable for the average consumer, that's a great thing. I think that's a great thing.
Mm. I was thinking, you mentioned 1999, and I started lecturing at the university in 95.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for about 8.5, 9 years. Mm-hmm. And my area of interest was exercise for health or ill health and how exercise plays a part in that. At the time, looked at doing my PhD in obesity with the local hospital. I always remember the consultant going, well, you could, but they might not be able to do any exercise because they might have no legs. I was just like, I was like in my 20s, and just
was fine.
Like, I'm not sure if I want to do a PhD now.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my goodness.
But it was just so, looking to make that contact between what was a sport and exercise science department with the local hospital was just so difficult back then. And I don't know if things have changed. I hope things have changed, that there's more open conversation because I'm very much about collaboration, but the health service in the UK, sometimes the departments don't speak to each other, which makes then any kind of intervention difficult and challenging. Mm-hmm. My partner had open heart surgery in 2011 in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And they contacted him for his cardiac rehab, in nearly the spring of the following year.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, it was summer, and it wasn't till after.
Oh, my word.
I'm obviously I was like, let's get out, let's start doing some stuff. So I was doing stuff with him anyway, but that was just like crazy, right?
That is crazy.
It's a bit pointless now, like 8 months, 9 months later.
That is, I'm almost rendered speechless because with my medical wellness background, and you know it because your partner has gone on this journey, the probability of readmits with a heart patient that is not immediately into a cardiac rehab segment, unless it's someone that, an exercise physiologist that has an event and they can self-monitor, that's a different kind of conversation, but that's not the norm. And so heart attack patients coming out of an event, within a week, they're likely to have another mini event, and the incidence probability of a readmit due to something triggered by that event in the first place is about 70% if there's no interventions, which is cardiac rehab, right? You get into step 3 here in America. So he was very blessed to have you to get out and get moving a little bit and walk. And I'm sure you did all of those things. Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
So it's very important. Here in America, it's the same, very much siloed. And some of the things that are presenting post-pandemic in the healthcare system in America which is creating new challenge and new opportunity. One is rural hospitals are closing due to not having enough volume to be able to keep the doors open to pay the bills. And there are many mergers and acquisitions. Many hospitals are having to pay back the COVID loans, the loans that they took, didn't plan for that. And so budgets are not being made. And in the thread of all that business conversation of healthcare operations is rising physician suicides due to burnout, early retirements, CEO exits. So healthcare is in crisis in America. And meanwhile, on the other side, with the positive of what the pandemic has presented, is different groups partnering, like you said, and seeing opportunity. So I have a colleague who is involved with the American College of Lifestyle Medicine and very esteemed individual. She won the 2017, what was it, Fitness Professional of the Year. I won Program Director of the Year. And so Jessica and I were, we met each other. That's the only time we've met. And we have such respect for one another, just like instant respect for you. And so she shared that the American College of Lifestyle Medicine is looking at exploring a new track within the physician space for new grads, new docs to assume a specialty there. Because we do have board certified obesity medicine docs and board certified sleep medicine docs, that kind of thing. So I do think some good will come. We clearly need more education around lifestyle everywhere, you know, not just here, but for the world. And there's a gap there. There's the opportunity for fit pros to grow and think of themselves more, not only as fitness professionals, but wellness professionals, because fit pros bring a lot to the table. I know so many that have health coach certifications and nutrition specialist cert, yoga. I mean, it is all part of wellness. And I just want to take a magic anointment and go, you're all anointed. You are all now wellness pros. Use what you have. Just grow a little bit and look at what you can do to provide education, not just fitness classes, but wellness programs, webinars, education sessions. Create community by doing this. We're now hybrid, right? So much great opportunity. And there's need. Physicians do not have time to provide lifestyle education. 15 minutes with their patient, they need to find their true and trusted partners in their local community. So if Ann goes to her PCP appointment or Debbie goes, Debbie, you've got hypertension and you gained 10 pounds since last year. I need you to join a group of maybe it's women in wellness and you just talk about the basic tenets of good health. We need more opportunity around that for those referrals.
There's two things that come to mind with what you've just mentioned there. Firstly, is that I think instructors have their remit in terms of what they are trained and certified to provide.
Yes.
And some stay very happily in that box. So all they talk about is come and do my step class, come and do my, you know, like just that, just the fitness side. And then there are others that venture off into other realms of which they're actually not certified to do, and yet they're providing it. And so it's like, how do we, I mean, I think I personally say to people that instructors that I work with is, look, we're changing lives. Even if it's just one fitness class that someone comes to do, their life can potentially change, right? So start talking about well-being, start talking about wellness rather than just your fitness class, because it's not just a fitness class. But then where does that stop? Do you see what I mean? Because then they're off providing nutrition, they're writing diet plans for people, they're doing all of this stuff, which counseling, they're actually technically not really trained or have the skill set to deal with, you know, everybody.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point you bring up. And with questions like this, and I lean into my medical wellness background, and this is where I had to grow up. I had to learn more about risk, potential risk, liability, compliance. And in the healthcare space, 23 years as the director of wellness, and now it's my new norm. I understand why. Mm-hmm. I understand. Is that in the healthcare space, the nurses, the docs, it was, you never color outside of the lines, right? Mm. What does that mean? And you sort of just described that, like, as a fit pro, wellness pro, what are your lines? Do you step out? And I think the best practice for the industry, because the future of our business is partnerships.
Yeah.
The future of our being described as an essential service is having the respect of healthcare systems. They have the patients, we have the professional skills. The bridge. How do we create the bridge?
Yes.
The bridge will only be created with mutual respect and us as fitness pros, wellness pros, whatever we call ourselves, coloring within the lines. So for me, my counsel, based on my experience, and I'm engaging with a wellness lawyer and understanding and seeing what is happening in America in those that have colored too far outside the lines, lawsuits are presenting. And it's going to go faster than slower because that side of the industry is booming, supplementation, diet, prescription, these kinds of things, right? So I think coloring within the lines is important. And the bumper guards of working top of license and providing education within the licensure that you hold. In fitness, those are certifications at this time. And I think general health and wellness coaching, when you know that the average consumer can Google sleep hygiene, what to eat, the average consumer is doing that. We as the fitness professionals and wellness pros can work within those spaces, but it does get a little muddy and a little litigious when we start prescribing eating plans if we're not a dietitian.
Yeah.
And particular supplementation without the counsel of their physician on board. So the line is, if just stay within your certifications and your knowledge base, and anything that exceeds that, the directive should always be to protect ourselves and show that we are professionals and we know our limits. Our partners need to know that. I'm speaking more to the healthcare professionals, is referring back to your doc. And right now in the industry, one of the big conversations is the weight loss medicines. TikTok has blown up Ozempic and Mounjaro and all of those. There's four diabetes medicines that are for diabetes patients to impact weight loss, to bend the curve of blood sugar, you know, these things that are presenting. And so multi-billion dollar industry, if a client in your fitness class approached you, any of us, and said, what do you think about Ozempic, Debbie? Should I go to my physician or should I find somewhere online where I can buy it to lose the weight? What do you think? We don't engage in that. I'm going to use this example because everybody's talking about it. The right answer at that point to protect all of us and to show that we're professionals, that would be coloring outside the lines for me with my medical wellness background. You would say, you know, I'm not a doc. I would say I'm not a doc. And so probably the best thing to do, honestly, talk to your PCP about it or whoever your allied health professional is, your women's physician or whomever your nurse prac or your PA or whomever is your trusted healthcare professional, and seek their counsel. Come back and talk to me. Let me know what they said. And we'll work on moving more and eating better, the basics of good health. And then we can see what your doc has to say about that. This is how you protect yourself and your business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So where do you see, you talk about this bridge. So where do you see, or what future do you see for the fit pro, especially group fitness? So personal training, slightly, you know, I've got slightly different approach to things. What do you see the future holds for group fitness professionals?
There's such a great opportunity. This is the future. If there's ever been a time to embrace that you are a fitness professional, it's now. It's now to take all of the skill that you have, your leadership ability, your ability to motivate one to many, using music as a motivator, the ability to create community and inspire and provide hope. It's now. It is the best time ever and for Fit Pros to shine. And I think it's a blend of things. It's leaning into your strengths, leveraging the ability to work hybrid, knowing that there's more for you to grow into. You don't have to box yourself into, I'm just going to teach Group X. When someone says to me, I'm sure you hear this all the time too. I'm just a Group X instructor. My head explodes. I'm like, do you know how magical you are? How important you are to get people moving? Let's change the script on that. And it's time for our industry to seek out the opportunity to grow. So if you are in your 50s and you're sort of now getting interested in older adults and the art of longevity and teaching balance classes or creating your own signature 50 plus program, it's now. It's now. Functional training, functional movement, lean into your strengths and teach, provide education, teach more than exercise. We are more than exercise professionals. Whether or not we recognize it, I truly believe we are. So leverage that.
I just think with what you're saying that you kind of mentioned, you know, instructors are getting older. You know, some of us, like I'm in my mid 50s and, you know, been doing this for quite a while, right? It is an industry where there's the aspect of the industry that kind of favors the young. And perhaps the older instructor doesn't feel relevant anymore. And yet, I think we're hugely relevant because of the experience that we've had, the fact that, you know, some of us have grown up in the industry, you know, we've seen how it's developed, etc. And looking at what the world needs from us now, you know, and moving forwards, we've got so much to offer. You know, and it breaks my heart that, you know, instructors get to a certain age and they think, oh, yeah, no, you know, I'm too old for this. You know, my face doesn't fit anymore. And they go off and get a part-time job in a supermarket or, you know, something like that. So, yeah.
I just love you. I so agree with you. I think you're exactly right. And I think the data, and if you skim across all the trend reports, just know it's your time. Don't step out. Do not step out right now. Because here's why. If you look at the consumer reports with McKinsey and Consulting, if you look at club reports like Club Solutions, they do an annual trends report. ACSM, there's a global report. There's an American report. If you look at the American Heart Association, CanFit Pro has a trends report. There are many trends reports. I follow them all because I'm teaching master classes and I'm an educator and I'm speaking and I'm writing. And it's very important to me that I stay current with those trends to be a good, strong educator. So I need to know that. And I love that piece of what I do. And if you look at those trends reports that I just mentioned, in all of them within the top five, and you know this, Anne, but for the audience, in the top five of each, whether it's a consumer-based report, a consultancy-based report, McKinsey and Consulting that just does consulting on what the consumers want, huge report, ACSM, one of the leading agencies that we all follow for exercise prescription, in the top five, all of them, older adult programs, functional training. What is that? Older adult programs, improving, offering fitness classes that improve day-to-day living. Well, what is that? That's longevity. Let's age well. Whatever sprinkled in there, balance, mobility, agility, cognitive training, whatever it is. So within the top five, those two are in all five. So us that are older in industry, we need to remain committed, stay the course, lift up the Fit Pros in our communities as you're doing, and start innovating and creating new fitness classes. In America, here's a huge gap in. So I'm 61, so I'm right there with you. And I did CrossFit in my day and I loved it for a long time. If you look at the top five trends in programming and the average group fitness schedule in America, what do we see? High intensity, CrossFit type classes, it goes on and on. I don't see a lot of mindfulness programs, meditation, yoga, recovery. We're talking about it, but I don't see the action of programming it. We need to take these steps. And if we're going to take the step, then we need the right people to teach these classes. Aging well, whatever we want to call it. So there's tons of opportunity. We need to be on the floor. We need to be mentoring. So my point in some of the gaps, I see high intensity classes to silver sneakers in a chair and two other programs, one with SCW, and they're all brilliant. They all service a particular market. And Alexis Perkins has a beautiful program called Chair One. All three of those are in the chair. So what happens in that middle? We're older adults, we're aging well, we're fit, we're strong. We don't want to CrossFit. We don't want HIIT and a whole class of plyometrics, but we're not quite ready to say we'd like to be in the chair exercising, right? Huge opportunity. And we need to embrace that and start innovating. Create new group X classes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I think what I'm tending to see is before, at club level, is they're targeting millennials and Gen Z still. And yet they have a membership base that has been with them for 10, 15, 20 years that's now older. They have hugely loyal instructors who've grown up there, you know, and grown old there in some ways. But I mean, like I do a class that's at my studio that's, it's not yoga, but it's yoga, you know, but it's functional, right? Yeah. And it's needed for, everybody needs it actually, if you do want to age well, definitely.
I totally agree. I'm involved with two large groups, and we were looking over some group schedules. And the person that I'm working with said, we have a great trainer. And we're addressing the trend with injuries for older adults and fall prevention. And if they do fall, corrective exercise is the name of the program. And I'm like, that's not it. That language does not appeal to the current consumer profile. First of all, corrective suggests we're not okay, that we need correcting or fixing or something. We have to be very mindful about the words we use to describe our fitness classes. Butts and guts, stop it. Just stop it. I mean, stop the madness. So I love what you're saying there, because it's innovation. If the innovation is just to look at your group X schedule and change the names to be more inclusive, that's a huge first step. It's brilliant. But we have to be mindful, because those who are overweight and out of shape and sick and tired and depressed and burned out and gained 30 pounds with COVID, and are sick and tired and depressed and burned out, that's our consumer profile right now. We need to be more sensitive and compassionate and be very mindful about how we're messaging our gift, what we bring, but we got to do it right on the front end, because you're right. The clubs are marketing to the millennials because they need the longevity of the business memberships.
Yes.
It's a business model. I respect it. But it is the time to do better and get out of the safe space of what we've done and adapt to our new consumer profile and health crisis that we're living within.
And this is where I think instructors who purely and simply teach within the club setting have an opportunity now to offer something on Zoom or, you know, out in their community, because as you say, a huge percentage of the population don't even set foot through the front doors of a health club or a gym, right? And they need our help. And, you know, we can take what we do out in the community rather than just wait for people to turn up at our classes in the club, you know?
Absolutely. In fact, it's the first step. If you want new members, Zoom into their living room and meet them on the couch.
Yeah.
Right? It's a blessing that we have these skills. So it's a very exciting time. Like, it's hard for me to not get twinkles in my eyes. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is our time, right? Hurry up, everybody. Let's make it all happen before the next chapter comes. But yeah, it's a very exciting time.
Awesome. Listen, I'm so conscious of time and, you know, that you've taken time out of your day to come and chat with me. So you've dropped loads of nuggets. Like, I've made loads of notes here and I'm going to listen back again. But if you could sum up group fitness in one word, what would that be?
Can I please have two words?
Go on.
Hope and motivation.
Awesome. Wonderful. That's the first point I've made of my takeout is use health as hope, but then use group fitness as hope. Yeah. Fantastic.
Ooh, that's wonderful. A new program.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So thank you so much, Debbie. So listeners listening in, I mean, you know, do hook up with Debbie and follow her. I know that I tend to follow Debbie more on LinkedIn, but you are also on the other platforms, right?
And yes, I am.
All the details of how you can find Debbie will be in the description for this episode. And she's also kindly putting forward an offer as well for two of her masterclasses. So details of that will also be in the notes below this episode. Honestly, you'll be inspired to, you know, just be in her world as I am. So thank you so much, Debbie, for your
time.
You're
welcome. Thank you so much. Talk to you soon. Okay. Bye.
As we conclude Debbie's episode, I'm certainly left with several key takeaways that shed light on the future of our industry, the health and wellness industry. It's not just the fitness industry anymore. One significant takeaway, which I love, is the power of using health as a source of hope. By reframing our mindset and presenting health as a beacon of possibility and positivity, we can inspire individuals to embark on their wellness journeys with optimism and determination. Debbie also emphasizes the evolution of wellness into a more holistic concept known as well-being. So it goes beyond mere physical health and encompasses joy, purpose, and overall fulfillment. You know, encouraging individuals to find joy wherever they are on their wellness path and connecting with their sense of purpose can lead to transformative and sustainable change. Furthermore, Debbie highlights the importance of professional growth and development. You know, as leaders in the industry, it's crucial for us fitness professionals to continually educate ourselves about risk, liability, compliance. By staying informed and updated on these matters, we can ensure the safety and well-being of our clients and protect our own professional interests. Debbie's episode also emphasizes the significance of forging partnerships and earning the respect of the healthcare system. Now, you know, if you follow me, you know that I'm all about collaboration. So this really resonates with me. The future of our business lies in collaboration and mutual respect, creating bridges between the fitness and healthcare sectors. By establishing these partnerships, we can work together to enhance the overall well-being of individuals and fostering a more integrated and comprehensive approach to healthcare, which is what is needed. Finally, Debbie highlights the importance of leadership skills, the ability to motivate and inspire not only individuals, but also larger groups. FitPros have a unique opportunity to shine in this era, right? Utilizing our expertise, our passion to make meaningful impact, you know, and music. What about music? It's a universal language that can serve as a powerful tool in motivating and connecting others. You know, so as we move forwards, you know, embrace some of these takeaways, use health as hope, embrace a holistic approach to well-being, invest in continual learning, foster partnerships, and hone your leadership skills, you know, because the more we grow, evolution and growth over a lifetime, right, the more we grow, the more successful, you know, this industry will be in impacting the lives of those people that we serve. So thank you for listening. I appreciate you. Do subscribe, do leave some reviews, and yeah, stay inspired, stay curious, and have a wonderful week.